The Nail in the Coffin!
All right, it's the Nail in the Coffin, part of the world-famous Evergreen Podcast Network. It's the second week of March, which means the Mid-American Conference men's and women's basketball tournaments are in Cleveland, which means it's time for us to welcome back our old friend, Ohio University Athletics beat writer, Jason Arkley. Jason, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a long, hard year for everyone in the world since I talked to you last, and so, yeah, this is another reminder of that because, again, just 12 months ago, we were wondering if this was going to be a big deal, and here we are now, and we know the answer to that question, don't we?
No kidding, man. I was thinking about that today. This week really marks 1 year, I think, since all hell broke loose. You know, when you and I talked, we were kind of in that in-between phase where I think the MAC was still planning to play the tournaments last year just without any fans. And then, of course, you know, we find out a couple days later that everything's canceled. And I think that was really what I would say was probably our first big sign of just how serious this was all going to be. I know I've got a lot of memories from that week in particular, but I'm curious, like, what do you remember? You were in Cleveland at the arena, right?
Correct. Things that stick out about this week 1 year ago. It's Wednesday night. I had just been in Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Sorry, I got to remember the name here. but in the Cleveland Arena on Wednesday, women's quarterfinals day, and that was done. And it was Wednesday night, and I'm out with some friends eating at a taco joint close to the arena. Everyone probably knows what it is. But we were there eating, and the news comes through about Rudy Gobert and the video of him goofing around and touching everyone's microphones as he gets up to leave a little press availability. And there was one guy at our table who was making jokes about it and a couple others at our table who were like, oh no, this is bad. This is a sea change. This is where it goes off the rails. And so there was speculation all night. We get into the arena the next day. Will Ohio and Akron play? Won't they? Well, they're on the court warming up. They must be going to play. No, they're not. And then John Steinbrecher had his presser right there before noon, and it was done. It was over with. It was a surreal feeling, and it was one that you weren't quite sure how to deal with because you had never seen anything like it before. And how quickly it went from something you could joke about 12 hours earlier to, okay, the tournament's done. Okay, every tournament's done. Okay, March Madness is over. And the world is shut down. And how quickly that all transpired is just amazing to look back and think about in retrospect.
Yeah, I remember that week, early on in the week, I think the Ivy League was probably the first organization to really cancel anything. And I remember my co-host Travis saying, the Ivy League, those are the smartest people around. If they're pulling the plug on their events, that's probably a sign of what the rest of us are going to be doing sooner than later. And then, you know, I think it was that Wednesday night, the NBA game in Oklahoma City got canceled like right before tip off. And I remember the PA announcer there made this really cryptic announcement that was like, no need to panic, everyone. But tonight's game has been canceled and we all need you to leave immediately. It was like, oh, that doesn't sound good. And then, you know, I think ESPN had the Wednesday night game in Dallas and they got footage of Mark Cuban sitting courtside. And I went and looked up this clip. You can find it on YouTube now of like, they got his reaction when he found out that the NBA was going on pause for at the time they said at least 30 days. I think it turned out to be about 4 months, but his reaction, he like doubled over in shock and then like fell back in his chair. Like he had gotten shot or something. Yeah, then, you know, the world changed after that. So crazy times. But, you know, that was really just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah, I'm kind of curious, you know, you've been at this a long time covering OU. How has your work changed and how have, you know, what you've been able to do and, you know, covering the teams, how's that evolved over the last 12 months?
It's been challenging. Again, for a period of time, you weren't sure there were going to be sports at all throughout the rest of 2020, right? So there was, the immediacy of the tournament being postponed, and quickly the decisions came, no spring seasons at all, spring football was shut down, and everyone just kind of put a bow on everything for about 2.5 months. And during that time frame, I was let go from my full-time work. So that's a big change right away, right? So I'm put in limbo and trying to figure out what I want to do. And as it got closer to this fall, I was deciding whether or not to continue to pursue sports writing and covering the Bobcats, because like most locations in the MAC, it's a coverage desert. There's not a lot of full-time people providing coverage on MAC institutions anymore. And I thought that was a niche I could kind of carve out for myself. So I decided to go through with it. Okay, well, are they going to have sports? Well, August comes, season's canceled. Again, limbo is probably the word I would use most often to describe the last year. But once the MAC reversed course and came back online and said, okay, we're going to try to have football, the day-to-day coverage of a program, of a team is just, it's distanced. Obviously we're not supposed to be witnessing practice. We're not supposed to have any personal interactions with players or coaches. Everything is done through electronics. So it's hard to gauge. You forget how many things you pick up in conversation just from body language, just from reading a reaction to something you said, the way someone tenses their shoulders when you bring up a topic. You forget all those little interactions from interpersonal communication. And so for me, I'm left trying to flail a little bit in terms of interviews, a little bit like pin the tail on the donkey. You're trying to find something that interests the subject, while at the same time is something they're willing to talk about. And you don't always get those cues that you would face to face that you do electronically. So those are some of the challenges and some of the issues I've had this year. And you're obviously missing out on tons of little news and nuggets, things that you don't pick up on from being around a team every day.
Have you talked to any players or coaches in person since all this began? Or, when you say you're doing everything electronically, like, are you doing everything electronically?
I've seen a couple assistant coaches at a grocery store. I'm shopping at the grocery store. They're shopping at the grocery store. So, hey, how you doing? How's this? How's that? But that's been it.
Skulking around outside the Kroger there or something.
No. I'm there doing my thing, and they're doing their thing, and it's been that way with a couple different athletes too. I'll wave hello to someone in the Kroger aisles, but in an official capacity, no, it's either been on the phone or through a Zoom kind of deal. So that's been hard. We're in the communication business, and I think there is something definitely lost in translation when all the communication is done this way. But again, we're not special in that way. Everyone's trying to deal with this and doing it the best they can.
I'll be very interested to see if at some point, when we get past this and the positive cases go down enough that things start opening up a bit more, and get enough people vaccinated and the outlook for society as a whole is in a strong enough place where we could get some sort of sense of normalcy, if how much of the old way of doing things in the sports media business come back. Like, I got to imagine, at least on some level, even if they wouldn't say it outright per se, that college athletics programs probably don't entirely hate the fact that they don't have to do as much of the answering to you and your fellow media members who are covering the team and getting all those scoops and getting information and asking tough questions.
I think two lasting effects from the last year will be, there will be less availability for players and athletes on a day-to-day basis, and that's whether that's collegiate or pro. I think you're going to see that trend continue. Franchises and programs have learned that they don't have to open things up. They can do things the way they want to do them. And I think that'll not, it will not serve the readership very well. But again, that's a trend I don't see reverting back to the way it used to be. I think things are going to be much more structured in that regard. And on the other side, I don't see many outlets paying for travel anymore. It's maybe it'll become more affordable after this passes, but again, by and large, most outlets have been able to get by just fine with having people doing what we're doing now and working remotely. So I think on-site coverage will be at a premium moving forward. And as such, I think media relations from professional and collegiate franchises with media will have a different feel, will be structured much differently than they were pre-pandemic.
Sure.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dean Archipotis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
You know, the other thing that I think about a lot with this is, you mentioned there was like the decision made that, you know, the Mid-American Conference is going to have a football season. And I think, did they decide that before or after the Big Ten? I feel like those two were kind of on a similar timeline.
That was after Big Ten. And the reason that I remember that is because the Big Ten players were doing their thing where they wanted to have a season. And you could almost see it organically trickle down to MAC level players on social media. And they're saying, well, you know, why can they have a season and we can't? And so once the test became affordable enough for the scope and scale that the testing had to be done to have a season, then the MAC kind of said, okay, well, we think we can do it now financially. Let's do it. But yeah, it was the Big Ten reversing course first, and then the MAC saying, hey, let's investigate this. Let's see if we can do it, because the concept and promise of spring football seemed really tenuous back in September.
Sure. But at the same time, I was like, okay, yeah, we're going to go for it. We're going to have a season. And then Ohio played what? Three games.
And two of those games were 7 days apart. Right. So they opened the season, play 6 days later, and then had, you know, trying to do math and the calendar math in my head, but they basically had 5 weeks left to play four other games and managed to get one game in. That's what will happen when you're trying to play in a pandemic and you're trying to navigate contact issues that are just impossible to mitigate completely when you're talking about a sport like football, when you're talking about a roster the size of football, when you're talking about college kids in general. And to me, I was shocked that there was not more games around the league canceled because of COVID testing. Not because lots of kids had it, but because of the spider web effect, right? The contact right. Tracing, like one guy, like we saw last weekend with the barber story and the NBA All-Star thing, like it can wedge in anywhere and it can really fracture your team. And Ohio True only had three of their six games played. And a lot of that was again, due to contact tracing, where entire chunks of the depth chart or position groups were eliminated because they were in a group meeting with this guy who knew a guy and he was infected and so on and so forth.
See, this is why I'm my own barber. You know,
no, you make it easy up there too.
That's right. I've not had a haircut in a real barber shop since my sophomore year down there, Carsey's Barber Shop on Court Street. And God, it's been probably 20 years now, if not longer. Oof, feeling a little old all of a sudden, but yeah, It's, you know, the thing is, though, I don't think Ohio's story in football was entirely unique. That's probably on the low end in terms of number of games played versus other football programs this year. But, you know,
and one of the issues
go ahead.
Ohio had, and any MAC team had, was giving the late start, you had fewer weeks to make up postponements on the back end of the schedule. You were bracketing yourself in for 6 games in 7 weeks, and if you had hiccups, well, they were going to be lost, and that's what happened to the Bobcats.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's been a similar challenge with the basketball season here. Tell me about the OU men's team, because they're scheduled to play on Thursday. I believe they've got Kent State in the first round or the quarterfinals, and we're not 100% sure who's actually going to be available, and I don't think we're going to know until, like, tip-off, right?
Right. We won't know. I'm sure Jeff Bowles, the coach, has an idea. But again, long story short, I'll try to make this brief, but Ohio had a 3-week break for COVID, positive test, contact tracing, returned to play, played 3 games in 8 days, and was scheduled to face Kent State in the final week of the regular season, had one more positive test, 2 more players caught up with contact tracing. So they missed that game a week ago Tuesday. That game was canceled. A road game at BG on Friday was canceled. And so in theory, you know, if the timetable lines up, that one player with a positive test and the 2 players with contact tracing will not be available for Thursday's quarterfinal game. Now, no one at the university has said who those players are, and so there's some wiggle room there when you don't commit publicly to players' names to testing positive or contact tracing, that you can say, well, they saw this guy on this date when that's when this calendar actually started. So long story short, we really don't know. We know that Ohio will most likely be without at least one player because of positive test. But again, you look at Kent State, and they may be without one of the best players in the league in Danny Pippen for who knows why. That's a whole different story entirely. But Ohio has been a team that's struggled to find rhythm and consistency all year long. They've looked good in stretches. They've looked bad in short one-off games against Akron. They had an awful outing against Toledo, against Kent State the first time. So I don't know what you're going to get. This is a team that's played 3 games in 5 weeks. And to have any idea about what they may be capable of or incapable of this week in Cleveland is beyond my ability to project.
Yeah, I was going to say, the university had an alumni event on Zoom here about an hour before you and I talked, and I jumped on there.
They might have given you guys the real scoop, yeah.
Well, you know, Coach Bowles was talking with Russ on there, Russ Eisenstein, the voice of the Bobcats. And the one thing that he said that really jumped out at me was that the other day the team had their first 5-on-5 in practice. It was the first time in over a month.
Right.
Which just kind of illustrates just how thin the ranks are there. So, yeah, you mentioned it's tough to get any sort of consistency. Well, of course, you're not playing at all. You know, you get 3 games in 30-plus days. I will say before the most recent shutdown here, I wiped out the last week of the regular season. They got those 3 games in, and the first 2 of them looked fantastic. So, and then wheels kind of came off against Buffalo, but who knows? Maybe that was Buffalo, symptomatic.
Yeah. And Buffalo has been doing that to a lot of teams around the league though of late. Their depth is ramped up. Their athleticism looks to be in good shape, and they've had a period of time now of playing together and working together, and they seem as locked in as any team in the league right now, Buffalo.
Yeah, so Buffalo's the 2 seed. They get Miami on Thursday, and I'm just looking through some of these other brackets or these other matchups in the bracket, and I got Toledo and Ball State. Toledo, the number 1 seed. Been a while since that program has won the conference, made March Madness.
Yeah.
I can't even remember.
Yeah. Todd Kowalczyk, longtime head coach there at Toledo, has not been able to get the Rockets into the NCAAs. And they've been so good for so much of this year. You look at them and you wonder, well, if the Rockets can't do it this year, then when will they? They've got good leadership in the backcourt. one of the most efficient offensive teams in probably league history. And they do it. They can do it from three. They can do it in transition. They don't like a big proven wide body in the lane, but everything else, they've been pretty good. They've been really good defensively in terms of efficiency. Marion Jackson has been an MVP type of talent all season in the MAC, and a veteran decision maker that'll get you into good spots. So I like Toledo, but again, the MAC tournament's always tough to forecast. And again, until they actually get to Cleveland and get on the floor, you know, they may be hit by something. They've been lucky and gotten through so far, but you never know.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, I feel like a lot of years this tournament's kind of wide open, and especially this year with, you know, so much mystery, uncertainty, whatever you want to call it, in terms of who's actually going to be available for all these teams. And you know, I mentioned that Toledo hasn't gone to the NCAAs in I don't even know how long. Having said that, you know, that's a good program. I feel like that's one of those teams that's in the mix every year. And you know, you and I were talking before we started recording. You know, I mentioned that I try to go down to the championship game every year, and I feel like I've seen them a lot. So they've been on the doorstep quite a few times.
Yeah, and Coach Kowalczyk has had a couple of near misses in Cleveland. He's entered as the one seed. I think this might be his fourth time. I probably should double check before saying that out loud. But he's had some best teams in the league go into this event before and not finish it off, not get the job done. And so he's due. That program's due for a breakthrough. And they're on that short list of contenders every year. And this year was no different. One Ohio note for you is maybe this will push them over the top is an assistant on staff now is Walter Offit, who of course has big game experience, tournament experience as the Bobcat, and is regarded as an up and comer in the coaching circle. So he joined Toledo this offseason. So if they break through, you can use that and beat your chest about the Rockets needing a Bobcat to finish the deal.
That's right. Well, if anybody knows how to get it done in March, Walter Offit is the man. I have a lot of good memories of him during that Sweet 16 run in 2012. I cannot believe OU has not been back to the NCAA since then. Impossible to think that after, you know, what we knew about that team, you know, with how many guys they had coming back. But I guess that's all ancient history now. Let's talk about this year's Ohio team a little bit more. You know, it's been hard to get a real read on him, but Jason Preston, point guard, certainly went on a little bit of a media blitz, I think, in December. It nearly pulled off the upset at Illinois. I remember sitting down and watching that game on a Saturday afternoon, played out of his mind, and I think that was the first of probably 50 times I got to hear his story and how he got to Athens. But for those who have not been watching OU as closely this year as I have, fill our readers in. Or our listeners.
So Jason Preston is the classic definition of a late bloomer. And to give you an idea how far he's gone, he entered this season, and depending on your preferred scout or projector, was tabbed a possible second round draft pick in this spring's NBA draft. Now, that's his current end point. His beginning point as a senior in high school, he was a guy that barely got on the floor, averaged 2 points, 2 rebounds a game. Had no college offers and was all set to go to college at UCF as a regular dude, as a regular Joe who's going to go study journalism. And so he talks to some folks. They talk him into going to this prep academy in Tennessee. He goes there and requests at his own volition to be put on a lower. These academies have different levels of teams: A squad, B squad, C squad. He asked to be put at a lower level squad so he can play with the guys he's more familiar with and play with his friends. One of his buddies takes some of their highlights throughout the season, cuts them up, puts them on Twitter as a highlight. And one of the assistants at Ohio University said, "Hey, I like this," and reaches out, gets in touch with Jason, and they bring him into OU. And now 3 years later, he is regarded as one of the better players in the league and a possible pro prospect. And the cherry on top of this gigantic underdog story Sunday is the fact that his mother passed away while he was still in school, still in high school. And he had to spend time living with a family friend. He's gone back and forth at, you know, a couple of different residences growing up. And he is a kid that's just continued to believe in himself and continue to persevere and is starting to reap the benefits of that belief now in what should be a promising basketball career with many, many years still ahead of him.
It's a great story, and he's a fun player to root for. He's a fun player to watch. OU's had some good point guards over the year, and he certainly joins that procession. Interesting cast around him, though. We've seen Ben Vanderplas, I know, has been around for a while now. I remember the first time you started talking him up before he was officially on the roster. I think he was like a medical redshirt or transferring.
He redshirted his first year, broken ankle.
There you go. That was it. So, yeah, it's been fun to watch him. And who's the big guy? Wilson?
Dwight Wilson.
Dwight Wilson, yeah.
He's the transfer from James Madison and has delivered the kind of ballast, the intestinal fortitude to anchor the paint that this team needed. He's a classic below-the-rim finisher. He's got hook shots. He's got flat-footed layups. He's got offhanded layups. He's got a very old man's kind of game in finishing around the rim, and I mean that as a compliment. He takes weird angles with shots off the glass, and his touch has been phenomenal. He has shot the ball better than any player in Ohio history. Entering the tournament, he's finishing at 65%. That's all shots from the field for the season, and that's 4 percentage points higher than Gary Trent, who you might be able to find 25 shots of his that weren't dunks when he was in school at OU. But so Dwight Wilson, the transfer from JMU, has been terrific and has certainly been an all-conference kind of talent this year and given Ohio something it didn't have, a proven paint scorer.
There are probably a few Cavs fans who are listening to this right now and looking at Andre Drummond's field goal percentage in the paint and wishing that he might take some pointers from Dwight Wilson, although he's not suiting up for the Cavs anymore, so maybe that's yesterday's news. Let's go around the rest of the bracket quickly. Who are the other teams and players that we need to know about?
Number one for me is Marion Jackson. He's a Cleveland kid who's done well over at Toledo, a four-year starter. And again, he's going to have a ton of pressure on him to get the job done and see this through as the one seed with the Rockets. But one of the swaggiest players in the league, and he'll deliver plenty of highlights. And along those same lines, number two for me to watch this weekend would be Lauren Christian Jackson, point guard for the Akron Zips. And he is tiny. I don't know what his listed height is on the roster, but it's probably 2 inches shorter than that. Quick as a hiccup. Again, another crafty guy with his finishes. He will get in deep. He will get down the lane. He will find ways to be effective inside the painted area. But of course, he's got that modern, super deep three-point range as well. He makes the Zips go. If he's on, then they got a chance to beat anybody. And my third player to watch this weekend would have been Danny Pippen from Kent State. He's the conference's best big guy. He's more of the classic mold type of center. He can double-double every night, but there seems to be questions about whether he's going to play. Kent State played at Buffalo on Friday. Did not play coach's decision, and there's been very little information about why he or teammate Justin Hamilton did not play in what was thought to be a big game for the Flashes over in Buffalo. So anytime you hear coach's decision, unless it's something along the lines of a death in the family, you have to wonder if there's some eligibility issues or some discipline issues going on that may impact him for this week. And by the time Thursday comes around, he'll probably trot out there and be in the starting lineup anyway. So, but he's the guy that's the classic big man type and the best center in the league, I think, by far.
Well, in the meantime, we can jump on the message boards and recklessly speculate as to what's going on with him.
Yeah, so. I can offer you 3 or 4 good theories right now, but nothing I would put my aim to.
Fair enough. Well, there's going to be, I believe they announced a limited capacity. There will be some fans there. So I'll be interested to see. I feel bad for the league in that, you know, if you look at which teams are involved this weekend, you know, and which ones are not, you probably, if you were going to pick 8 teams to be here, this is probably the 8 you would want. It's these are programs that, you know, I think you've got all the usual suspects who would draw well are all in the mix You know, OU normally draws pretty well. Akron, obviously, and they're the 3 seed. You know, Toledo as well, and Kent State, of course, they're the 4. So, well, I guess we're going to do some real good subscriber numbers for ESPN Plus over the next few days instead.
It is kind of disappointing because you mentioned it. You've got BG Akron, you've got Ohio, Kent State, Toledo, Ball State, and then the one matchup that isn't super sexy in terms of a rivalry type games, Buffalo, Miami. But you've got 3 really old school type of games there to all play one behind the other on Thursday. Could have been a great day for basketball. But again, we're all fighting through this together, and that's the max burden to bear right now with how things have played out.
We are, and you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel, and for once I don't think it's an oncoming train as we're dealing with all this. You know, message I keep telling all my friends is we got to hang in there. We're getting close, and you know, with any luck we can get some sort of sense of normalcy here sooner than later. But in the meantime, we're going to enjoy what we can, and hopefully we actually do get a March Madness and a MAC tournament this year, and we'll see what happens. But Jason, your work now covering OU is on, I believe, suacbobcats.com, right?
Correct. It's a one-man operation, totally self-sufficient. And again, it's a portal where you can read about daily news happenings with the Bobcats. You can read about what I'm thinking. But again, for right now, it's a free site. But please go click, go read some pieces. Tell me what you think. But it is suacbobcats.com. If you have trouble remembering that, remember it's Stand Up and Cheer. So SUAC Bobcats.com. And yeah, I've been doing that since November, and I hope to be continue to do that for a long time moving forward.
And my fellow OU alums will recognize that acronym, and we'll have a link to Jason's site in the show notes for this episode. Does a great job covering the Bobcats, and if you're an OU fan, you know that. You've been reading them for years, so make sure you continue doing that this year as well, even as he's sequestered away and having to do everything remotely over Zoom, like so many of the rest of us in our jobs. Still doing a great job with it, and if you want to keep up with the OU teams, that's your guy right there. Jason, every year, man, I always look forward to doing this, and this was no different, even if all the circumstances around the MAC tournament are. Thanks, man, and looking forward to reading your stuff this weekend.
Yep, I hope to deliver a ton of it. And again, 12 months from now, hopefully we're able to get together again in person. And I can start a new streak. I've been to every MAC tournament for the last 15 years. That streak ends here in 2021. So hopefully in 2022, we can crank it back up again.
Let's mark it down now. Next year, I'm going to try to find a way to get down there, and we'll meet up for some of those tacos. You've got the inside scoop on where to go. I'm pretty sure I know where you're talking about.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Most Northeast Ohio people do. The taco place near the stadium.
That's right. All right. That's going to do it for us. As a reminder, you could subscribe to The Nail in the Coffin on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all the other podcast listening platforms. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/WFNY. And then hit that Nail in the Coffin button on that page. You can back us there. And yeah, that's going to do it. Our thanks once again to Jason Arkley. I'm Tom Valentino. It's been The Nail in the Coffin, part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!